Welcome to Bodhisattva Conversations With. I'm Julia Kai, and I interview people about aspects of their life that are or have been significant to them.
Once again, I am with Steve Walker, which is brilliant. Yesterday, the podcast that we released was all about his life as a homeless person, his life now as a recovering addict. And he had just come back from a fishing competition where he had come fifth because he is an angling genius. He's a veteran of the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. And in our last podcast, we spent time talking about fishing, of course, because that was supported by the Phoenix Heroes, which is an incredible charity that looks after the veterans and helps them with all sorts of things. Steve, what does Phoenix help with the veterans with, the Phoenix?
They're there to support you. You can ring them at any time. They help you with counselling, anything in your life, anything at all. Housing, when you've got problems, addiction problems, they're there to support you. And they've also got they're doing it through fishing as well.
Oh, brilliant. Because we talked in our last podcast, didn't we, about obviously your very, very, very tough childhood and how you headed out really from 12 years old, but also you spent time in the army. And then we covered a little bit about the fact that you'd been, I think you started taking drugs when you were 13 years old.
Yeah.
And you literally, it's been 18 months that you've been in recovery. So we didn't know exactly where we were going to go today because there is so much. We're going to clearly do more than just two podcasts because there is lots to cover in your life. But perhaps as we ended last time with you saying that you'd had an amazing life in so many ways, terribly, terribly hard and terribly difficult, but you'd had amazing experiences, but that you were going to have more amazing experiences in the future, but this time you were going to remember them. And so you also touched last time on how Gary Stockton found you at Victoria Station. So maybe if we talk about this, about how you've come to be here, planning your life, not having taken drugs for 18 months, can you please, yeah, tell us about that day when you started. You said that Gary turned up, you had your sign there, and that he said, so perhaps tell us that again, how you found that you'd both entered the army at the same time.
Yeah, when he found me at Victoria, it was like the set of circumstances that for him to meet me was like, so it was like, it was more a miracle than anything. But what's happened since then, since he met me, like what he did for me, like by getting me into treatment, that's because it really is. I do owe him my life, really. So I look at it like that, yes. Anyway.
So what happened? Because he had turned up and you'd been a bit resistant, I think.
Yeah. Very resistant for years. There was people from other military charities used to come and offer me hotels and I'd say, no, when I'm okay. I were there like, when I look back and I used to think that people didn't know that I was taking drugs and I was oblivious to the fact that I thought I looked okay. I really did. But there were so many that, like, Veterans Aid had offered to help me, but I just resisted their help, and I don't know what it was about Gary. I think it was because he was a bit more persistent. I knew I couldn't get rid of him just by giving him what he wanted to hear. And he'd have just walked away. I knew that wasn't going to happen. You can tell straight away. Because I've met a lot of people, all these charities and these God people, and they've, like, you just know they're not doing it for you, they're doing it for them. So they, I knew it were different with him.
And so what is it that you pick up? Is it just a sixth sense that you know?
You've got to have that. When you're living outside, because you get so many people coming up to you, like, and you just get to know who is genuine and who isn't. Right, and you have to know, because otherwise you get people coming up to you saying, I want to help you, how can I help you? And their idea is, they put you up in an hotel for a couple of nights and all that, which you do get offered, but how's that helping me? Yeah, it gives me hope for two nights. But then after the two nights, they don't realise that what you then feel. It's then you feel worse. Because then you're back, you think, well, I'm back out again. So, like, eventually you just come to the conclusion that, hey, do you know what? I better adapt to this life quickly, because this is my life now. You really do believe that where you live outside is how you're going to live for the rest of your life. And obviously, it's not very nice, so I thought I'd ease the pain a little bit. And my way of easing the pain is to change how I feel. And the only way to change how you feel when you're outside on the streets is to take drugs and drink.
Yeah, yeah. So with Gary, there was something about him.
Yeah.
And he was persistent, but it wasn't immediate, was it?
No.
Him? No.
The fact that he came back the next day.
I see.
He sorted a few things out that day, but they came back the next day, and they were gone. They made a video, and he come back with another two veterans, and one of them said he didn't want to help me. Look, he's a junkie, and all that. Let's not help him, but Gary were persistent.
And what did they make the video of?
Right. So they wanted to for me to get help. Oh, they wanted for me to get help because my addiction was that bad that I was having to take so many drugs. The amount of drugs that I was taking was when I look back at it now, it was horrendous.
But it was what you needed.
And drugs from the doctor as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was what you needed to survive.
Yeah. Just to, like, people think it's easy living outside. You get people who come up to you who think they don't really realise how much of an hardship it is. Not having a tap. Imagine not having a tap to go and get a drink of water. So every time you want a drink of water, you've got to go and buy it.
Yeah, yeah. And when you want to go to the loo or have a shower or, yeah.
You're in central London in a car park at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's no public toilets open.
No.
All the public toilets have gone. I'm one of the reasons why all the councils in London have shut all the toilets down.
Yeah.
Because we didn't use them just for going to the toilet.
No.
That was a safe place to do your drugs.
Of course, of course. I had, I think it was 1 week, I'd been kicked out by a boyfriend. And I had nowhere to go. And a friend of mine had a barn that we didn't know how long I'd need this place for. But it was a barn, but it had no running water and it was freezing cold. But it was somewhere for me to stay. So I stayed there, I think it was a week, maybe a little bit longer. And I was working, so I was working corporately actually in people's lives. So I had to what did I do? In the night, if I needed a wee in the night, I used to go into, it was frosty, it was November, and I'd go out into the, but it was in the grass, it wasn't central London. And then in the mornings, I was bursting to go to the loo, and I'd used to, had a car, so I mean, it was a very different experience to yours, Steve. I'm just remembering how I then drive very quickly to the gym, because I'd gone to a gym. So I had a lot of privileges. And then I'd go to the loo and have a shower and get myself looking okay. And nobody knew for this week that I wasn't really living anywhere. But that, I still had all the comforts of cars and gyms, and yet you had nothing.
Well, you just get used to it. Yeah. Can't change. If you've not got the capability, well, if you don't really want to change it.
Yeah.
Obviously, the addiction that I had was costing a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I had to get that money every day. Yeah. Now, if I lived inside, I'm not there to get that money.
Yeah, so of course. Yeah.
Without that, I wasn't taking them drugs to, I wasn't off my head or anything. I took them for that long that they didn't even work anymore.
No.
But if I didn't take them, the physical illness that I had was bad.
Yeah.
Whereas I couldn't, I ache from top to toe, stomach cramps, can't stop basically shitting through the eye of a needle. It's horrible. So I had to take that, all them drugs, just to feel normal, just to be able to go out and get that money to then do it again. Because if I didn't, I was in a mess. Like when I did go, when I finally did give them up, I didn't sleep for 6 weeks.
Wow.
6 weeks.
So tell us, how did it come that Gary's persistent? How did you come to being in the position of having 6 weeks of no sleep and no drugs?
Well, when I first met him, he went away and I thought he was, I knew he was different, but you're never 100% right. But when he came back the next day, that's when I really did realise. Anyway, a couple of days later, they made they wanted me to go into a treatment centre in Liverpool. So I done the assessment. I was in Vauxhall. I would just cross the bridge. I'd got a pocket full of drugs, and I get a phone call, and it's a treatment centre in Liverpool. And I done the assessments, stood on Vauxhall Bridge with a load of drugs in my pocket. And I'm telling him, yeah, of course I want to give up. Right. And anyway, I passed the assessment. But someone was having to fund this. So really. And also, I had to go in there clean. I couldn't go in there still with drugs in my system. I had to have no drugs in my system. So I'd have had to have done like a detox. But to get in the detox, you've got to have no drugs in your system except the drugs that the doctor gives you to come off the drugs. And the doctor would not have been able to give me enough drugs because I was already taking them anyway, as well as all the other my drugs. So I just couldn't have done it. So Gary got in contact. I passed the assessment, but I couldn't do the detox. Anyway, they got in touch with another charity who says we'll pay for him to go into treatment. So this was in January, but I kept moving a little bit away. So like, when I had to go and when they were coming to see me and they knew where I'd be, See, the night before, I'd thought, oh, I don't fancy this. So I'd move half a mile away. Yeah. And then they'd have to end up looking for me and all that. So from the first day Gary met me, I think it was about 6 weeks before I actually went.
So you kept just skedaddling off?
Yeah, go a little bit away. Yeah. And then, but there was another man, a wing commander, he was a bit more persistent. He'd known me for years as well. And he knew what I was about. Because, unfortunately, you have to become a very devious and manipulative person.
Yeah, just to survive.
To survive. Well, it's not surviving anyway. I wasn't doing it for just to survive. Obviously, I feel very guilty about the people that did help me. But for all them years, and they were giving me money, thinking that they was helping me. But I never lied to them and told them, yeah, I need this money so I can go in and stay somewhere. I just didn't tell them what I was going to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I looked at that for years. Well, I'm not lying then, am I?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd convinced myself that I wasn't doing anything bad.
Yeah. People give money, and once it's been given to you, though, it's your money.
Yeah. I know, yeah. But it's not very... Now that I am in recovery, it's like when I look back on some of the people that have given me money, who I used to take money off regularly as well, and they thought they was helping me. You do learn in that another thing that did keep me out there for that long is the guilt and the shame. And because once you know that once you give up, people are going to see the difference in you.
Yeah.
And you have to make amends to people. And that kept me out there for years, the thought of me having to then tell everybody that, oh, listen, I had a drug problem. Because
yeah.
I'd convinced, like I said, I'd convinced myself no one knew.
Yeah.
I've had people come up to me and say, what are you going to do with this money? And I'd say, I'm not on drugs. Not me. Nah. I'm not on drugs. I don't drink. And, like, when I think now what I used to look like.
But it's all part of the tapestry, isn't it? The people who are giving, the people who are
surviving,
the people who are taking drugs.
Yeah, because do you know what? I wasn't breaking the law to get them.
No,
I could have took another road. I could have gone out and started and think, well, I need £150 every day because that's how much my addiction was costing me.
Yeah.
And that's just for the drugs. There's plenty of other ways I could have got the money. I could have, like, instead of standing there all day selling a magazine, I could have thought, well, I'll just, like, the next woman with, like, a nice Cartier watch on and obviously got a few bob, I'll just take her back.
Yeah.
That's what a hell of a lot of addicts do.
Yeah.
They start breaking the law to fund the rabbits. I was just lucky that I found a different way that wasn't breaking the law, and I was reasonably good at doing it.
Yeah.
To earn that money every day.
Yeah, and you did it. But what happened next? So then you've been 6 weeks skedaddling away from...
Yeah, trying to run away because I wanted to give up. No one likes that life, but I just didn't think I could do it. Anyway, they got me. Into
so they found you eventually.
Yeah, they got me again.
And that was
That went on for about 5 weeks.
And it was Gary and the other guy. Who was the other one?
There was a wing commander from another charity. Yeah. Anyway, I think it was Tuesday, the 12th of February, 2019. I'd been told that was it then. Anyway, I've turned up an hour late, like, I didn't really want to go. And I've gone there.
Wow.
And I went into treatment.
Whereabouts was the treatment?
I went in Bournemouth.
Oh, yeah.
in the Providence, quite a famous one, really.
And so you walked through where, the door. Sorry, that's where.
That's where Gazza and Russell Brand and all that lot do.
Oh, yeah. So you walked through the doors?
I was, obviously, I looked a bit of a mess. And I went in and I've looked around and there's like, these were a lot of privileged people. And then you got me and I'm thinking, and I'll never forget it. There was someone I'm still in contact with now. There was a girl there called Hayley from, because the majority of people, like, when I walked in, they moved a bit further away. But Hayley didn't. Like, and she come up and she said, oh, hiya. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, what have I let myself in for? I knew what was coming. I knew what this, what me detox were going to be like. It was anyway. So I get in there, book in, go to the doctors. Told him what I was taking, and he went, "Hey, you don't look that for someone who's taking that much drugs. You don't look." You look okay, you don't look that. But what it is, I'd got a lot of clothes on because I live outside. So by the time I'd stripped all my two coats and a couple of pairs of my jeans, my tracksuit bottoms, my fleece, my hoodie, a couple of t-shirts and like a sweatshirt layered up, and I stood there, filthy dirty. Yeah. And he went, oh, well, now he understood a bit. Anyway, so I'm thinking, great. I'm gonna get some drugs off the doctor at least, because by this time, even though it was only 4 hours since I'd done, before I went to this treatment centre, the drugs that used to last me 24 hours, I'd got, I had them there, so I thought I'm not gonna waste them. I'm definitely not giving them away, so I'll take them.
Yeah.
So I took my full day supply in an hour, sat in someone's flat in Chelsea.
Wow.
And then went, well, so the doctors tested me, done a pee test, and the line was quite thick. Not it was definitely not a faint line. And he said, oh, you won't need anything today then. But he didn't realise that, like, after, because it had been now, no, it wasn't 4 hours, it was 6 hours.
Yeah.
They didn't realise that 6 hours.
It's a long time.
I couldn't go 6 hours without. I was addicted to the, not just the drugs, I was addicted to all the process of taking them.
Yeah.
Like, so getting everything ready and,
yeah.
Anyway, so, and he wouldn't give me any. And then I seen one of the counsellors, another one, Tara, she said, you'll be all right. I said, Tara, I said, I'm going to be ill. She went, you'll be all right. So I went to the detox house. And at 7 o'clock, he went, the fella who runs the detox centre said, come on, get your coat on then, get ready. I said, what for? He went, you're going to a meeting. You're going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I told him I wasn't going. I said, I've not got a problem, I've given up. So he went, you've got to go. I said, I'm not capable of going. Anyway, because by this time I'm ill.
Yeah, you're not well.
I'm physically not well.
Starting to have
so that. Anyway, I didn't have an option. I either left the detox or went to this meeting. And he said, come on, come to the meeting. It's not for, I'm thinking I'll get So we got out of the detox and we're having to walk to the meeting. And it's about a mile away.
Oh, no.
And I'm
and
there.
And you're feeling terrible.
And I'm feeling bad.
Yeah.
And I've sat in this meeting. And the man who was doing the main chair at the meeting, a fella called Dublin John, I used to smoke crack with him.
Oh, wow.
In Pimlico. I thought he were dead. But he'd run away. He'd left London, gone to Bournemouth.
Wow.
And ended up in treatment. And he was 2.5 years clean. And he's there doing the meeting. Doing the main chair of the meeting. And I'm thinking, God, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I really couldn't.
It's like a film, isn't it?
you wouldn't have been. Yeah. You wouldn't have been able to write that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know about sharing back. I was ill by this time. Anyway, he took the meeting. I listened to what he said. Thought, what a load of crap.
What did he say?
He's just telling about his experience and how good recovery is and all that. And I'm thinking, I just couldn't imagine not taking drugs.
No, no.
I took them for that long.
Since you were 13,
I just didn't know.
So you were 50 and you've been taking them since you were 13
years old. Horrible. But anyway, I went back to done the meeting. Went back to the treatment centre. Went back to the detox house. Had an haircut. Had a bath. They made me something to eat. And then I sat there all night just watching the telly in absolute pieces. And then in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I said to the bloke, I said, what time do we go to the treatment centre? He said, why? I said, because I need them drugs that doctor is going to give me. And he said, all right, oh, we go at 9:30. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. So I had another 3.5 hour wait, and we got a taxi to the treatment centre. And I'll never forget this lady, Tara, lovely lady. And she's given me this tablet. She's told me about how my detox is going to go. And she's given me this tablet. And I've looked at it. And I was going to get this tablet every day for 5 days. No, every day for 7 days. And I've looked at this, how many mils they were giving me.
Yeah.
And I've said to her, I said, listen. I said, if I went to the doctors in London, told him I were giving drugs up, the amount of drugs that you're going to give me over the next 7 days, I get twice a day in London.
Wow.
So, I said, so, she went, oh, you'll be all right. And by this point, I was sick of people telling me I'm going to be all right. Anyway, I took it. It gave me about 2 hours of relief.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm ill again.
Oh, dear. And when you're feeling ill, is everything aches? And
everything aches.
And your stomach's
But crying. I'm also, but it's not like I can just go and lie down.
No, you can't get away.
I'm doing, group therapy and,
So the group therapy started immediately?
Yeah, there were 70 people in this rehab.
Wow.
And they were all looking bouncy. And I wasn't.
Had they been there for a long time?
No, the majority of them weren't addicted to the drug. It's all different drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you're addicted to weed, that's what some people in there, because he used to smoke a bit too much weed.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, to me, weed's not even a drug.
Yeah.
That's just something you take.
Yeah.
That's just a normal, what you just take. Where some of them was addicted to a bit of sniff.
Yeah.
like other, there was people there and they were privileged anyway, which I don't mind, that's a different thing that anyway, but they was all looking bouncy. Anyway, after 2 hours I'm sat there, cuddle in a radiator, it's boiling hot in the place, yeah. And I'm freezing cold. I've got a massive coat on, I'm cuddling the radiator, and some fella walks in, who I ended up staying with in one of the houses, and his name was Johnny the Fox. And he went, he just laughed at me, he went, "You're in it, aren't you?" So I went, "Yep." He went, "Well, I've got a bit of advice for you." I said, "What's that?" He went, "Just remember this, it's all in the head." And I went, "Oh." But it turned out that he was an addict, serious drugs.
Yeah.
Like, and he'd been exactly where I was, yeah. So he knew.
Yeah.
And he was just doing it to try and make me feel better. But I was, for every day I used to try, for the next seven... Oh. For the next 7 days, every day, because I used to get one tablet in the morning, and then they used to give me a Zopiclone to help me sleep.
And it didn't.
No. It wasn't like what? I've took them on the streets. We used to take them 30 at a time.
Wow.
Just to like have a couple of hours kip. They were giving me one. Not going to work, is it? Yeah. So I used to, every day I used to try and convince her, giving me all.
Yeah.
Because he had all my medication in a box for the week. And I'd say, just give it me all.
Yeah,
at least then I'll get one night's sleep.
Yeah. And so you just weren't sleeping, not a wink.
Didn't sleep.
Not at all.
Didn't sleep for 6 weeks.
What did you do during the night?
Just lie there listening to music.
Yeah.
I wrote a bit of I wrote my life story as well, and then I had work to do.
Yeah.
Luckily, I did have something to do, and there was, and I'm not on my own.
Yeah.
If I'd have been on my own, there's 100%. I would not be sat here talking to you, and I'd have just gone.
Yeah.
But I was in a house with other people, so I'd just keep them awake anyway.
Yeah.
I'd go and wake. I was having loads of baths because that's the only time you get any relief in the bath.
Yeah.
And then the fella in the his room was next to the bathroom. He'd say, "Steve, will you stop having baths? You keep waking me up."
How many baths did you have?
He'd have about one every 2 hours.
Yeah, just to give yourself that ease.
I'd never been so clean. I hadn't. I was gleaming. I was gleaming. But, 6 weeks. But because I'm having to go into the treatment centre and do work, I wasn't putting 100% into it. I thought it was a bit of a joke.
And the work was always with groups?
Groups. I used to go in there for the first month. I never used to get involved with a group therapy. Because Ailey, the one thing, because I'd done the first month with her. And listen, that girl could yap. And like, she was very like opinionated. It was hilarious listening to her.
And she was in for treatment too.
In for treatment. Yeah. Look, listen, she's a gorgeous girl. Like, she's like a lovely person, so kind. But like, addiction doesn't have no preference.
No,
you can be rich, poor, anything. It doesn't matter. You could all end up there. But I didn't get involved with any of I did it at home. I wrote all what I had to write. I was just complying, innit? I had no intention of staying clean, really.
No.
I didn't have any intention.
So you were just sitting it out?
I used to count the days down. I used to have to write a daily diary.
Yeah.
And I'd worked out that 6 weeks, 42 days, So I used to put it in the top right-hand corner, 41 days left, 40 days left. Hey, and it was that just... But then... So I didn't get involved.
You didn't have one-on-one therapy?
Yeah, once a week with Nicole. Right. Yeah. But I used to just tell her what she wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Easy done. I'd just like spent 20-odd years manipulating people.
Yeah, of course.
But what I didn't realise is she knew.
Yes.
And I didn't know she knew. And so when I found out after the 6 weeks of me not really trying, just doing enough, that's when I found out that they'd extended me another 6 weeks. But she told me, she says, this is going to be pointless unless you start, like, getting involved. So, but I don't know what it was after that 6 weeks. But I did decide, when she told me this, you can fuck off if you want, like, go. Or you can stay. I went and I stayed. So I thought, you know what? Someone's paying money for this. Like, it's a bit insulting if I don't give it a good go now. So I thought, yeah, do you know what? I'll give it a go. Because by this time, my head's clearing a bit. And I'm seeing all these people at these meetings, like, 25 years clean.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and these are scum who, 25 years ago, these people were scumbags.
Yeah.
Now they're, like, married with children and go to work and drive a cab. Just lovely people.
Yeah.
So anyway, I started doing the work.
And were you out of pain in your body by now?
Yeah, because when I came, this is a funny thing, that I, when I finally did surrender to the fact that I was going to have to do this, I slept. I did sleep. I slept for the first time.
So interesting, isn't it?
It is. A lot of it is in the mind.
Yeah.
A lot of it, I'd convinced myself I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I convinced myself I just couldn't do it.
And then when you decided to start doing the work, you started to sleep. And then what did the work entail?
I used to have to go. For me to stay clean, I have to, for the rest of my life, I have to do meetings. I have to go. I have to sit there and think. When someone asks me, my thought process is not right.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you see how I've ended up. So what I decide to do isn't right. So it's best that whatever I decide, do the opposite or take on someone else's advice. Ask them what do you think. And 99% of the time what they think is a complete opposite to what I'd have done. So I have a sponsor and I do meetings. I send a gratitude list out. I pray. I say the Serenity Prayer every day.
What's that?
It's just a prayer. Because I got involved in Narcotics Anonymous,
yeah.
Innit?
So what is the Serenity Prayer?
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, and when you break that down, it's basic. But yeah, I got involved with Narcotics Anonymous, but the same thing happened there as when I first went into treatment.
Yeah.
I was going to these meetings, but I wasn't getting involved.
Right, yeah.
And I would just sat there listening. I used to like listening to people's stories, but you can't do that. You can't do that. You're just like, you're treading water. You're just waiting for the inevitable to happen. But they, in NA, they give you the tools that when you're going to have a shit day. Yeah. Everything's not a bed of roses.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for anyone.
So what tools have they given you for the bad days?
I've got people I can ring up.
Yeah.
And like, when the obsession's on me to use drugs, there's people, I found this out and it does actually work. If I ring someone up and talk to them for 15 minutes, after 15 minutes, I've forgotten about taking drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
So the obsession's gone.
So you reset.
I've just reset. I've got people I can ring. Because listen, it's not a bed of roses. Still, my life is like, be so easy for me to just think, you know what, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take long for my brain to convince me that I were better off outside.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It's not that bad sleeping outside, having nowhere to live and doing all them drugs and like.
So you have a network of support.
Yeah.
So.
But Phoenix Heroes is the main, apart from that, NA. Phoenix Heroes, this, and Gary Stockton and his wife Sue, and all them people in there, they've been a massive, massive part of me staying in recovery.
Because you stayed another 6 weeks, but you also said you did.
After weighing my treatment centre, I done another. After the second 6 weeks and I graduated, and then they stuck me in aftercare for 3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuck me in there.
But
that wasn't, it wasn't as like full on there. You got a bit of freedom.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of a preparation time for.
Yeah. Because I'm ringing people up, I'm speaking to people, and they're saying, how's the treatment going, Steve-O? And I'm like, yeah, it's going all right. Oh, and they said, what have you been up to? And then I went, I went playing golf the other day and I went on a boat party and then I went to some festival and I went fishing. And they're thinking, I bet I used to sit there and think, I can't tell them I went playing golf. I'm trying to convince these people. But it was easy. But you can't just, you've got to have some fun, haven't you?
Well, I think it's got to be.
But I have free time. I've got to learn.
Yeah, it's got to be fun.
I'm not going to be, do you know what? When I look back on it now, if I could, I would do that then first 12 weeks. Not the first 12 weeks. I'd do the second 6 weeks of treatment.
Yeah.
I would love to live like that for the rest of my life. I'd love to live at that treatment centre and just do that.
Yeah, yeah. What did you love about it?
It's just like, you're meeting different people all the time. I'm a people person. Meeting people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing I can't change. I've always gotten well with people. But it's just that you're there and you're having a laugh and you live with six other people and you're in a house and you just, it was very, that second 6 weeks was the most enjoyable bit of the treatment. The first 6 weeks.
Too hard.
No. Aftercare, 3 months, bit boring.
Yeah.
Left to your own devices. Not it, it wasn't enough. I didn't do like enough. I didn't have enough structure in them.
Yeah. So for your, because you better stop, because it's so lovely listening to your stories, and we've been talking for 44 minutes.
Is it?
So for
I'm not really a talkative person.
Well, it's very good. Well, it's lovely hearing you. So for your future now? Obviously, it's very, there's very tough days, but do you have a, do you have visions or dreams, or you just take one day at a time, or what is it?
How
is
I it take one day at a time now. It's like just for today.
Yeah.
As long as I wake up this morning, I'm not getting any drugs in my system. All I have to do now, I'm probably going to go to bed at 10 o'clock tonight. If I can make it till 10 o'clock tonight without doing any drugs,
yeah,
it's been a successful day for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going to be a successful day, and I've no intention of taking any today.
No, no.
There's not nothing that could happen to me today. Someone could, like, there's nothing really.
No, no. And so, what would you say to somebody else who's having a difficult day? Because you... Do you have anybody who would turn to you, or
what? Do you know what? This is what works for me at the moment. I wish everybody could have a Gary Stockton.
Yeah.
But everybody's not as lucky as that.
Yeah.
I wish everybody could have a group of people like who are from Phoenix here. I wish everybody could have that. But they haven't. But just... go to NA. If you have a drugs problem, go to NA.
Yeah.
Or AA or CA or... There's so many of these A's.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
and
you can go for calories now, probably. There'd be one for...
Yeah.
There's all sorts of people, all sorts of different... these fellowships. AA, NA, CA, they're brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And, they, and you get supported.
You get support.
You get people who understand.
Yeah. Who understands another addict?
Yeah.
An addict.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah. But today I'm happy.
Thank you.
No, brilliant. Thank you.
So we will continue because there's lots to talk about.
Oh, I've got some funny stories.
Of your life.
Yeah.
So it's really good to have had the kind of overview of your life in our last interview, and then today to hear of how you are now living each day without drugs, and then it will be really interesting though to hear lots of the stories.
Yeah.
So,
and my future plans.
And your future plans. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. If you would like to be a part of our community, please join my Facebook group, Conversations with a Bodhisattva.